Welcome to the Ignite Podcast, the only healthcare marketing podcast that digs into the digital strategies and tactics that help you accelerate growth. Each week, Cardinals experts explore innovative ways to build your digital presence and attract more patients. Buckle up for another episode of Ignite.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Ignite. I just woke you up on your drive home, but you're going to really enjoy today's discussion. This is good. We're going to get to talk dermatology. We're going to get to talk about Spain's net, the Netherlands, Chile, and mostly soccer, not baseball and not boring golf. No offense. Maite, welcome to Ignite.
Hi, Alex. Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited. This will be good.
No problem. We are. I'm really pumped. It's my favorite part of the week. Don't tell my colleagues, but this is my favorite part of the week because I get to learn from you. And this is what keeps us fresh. This is how we learn. Like when we just go to pitches and we don't, you know, it's hard because it's a one way. So we get to learn from you. And so do all of our listeners. We're going to hit them hard for the next 15 minutes. And that's fun. My take. Tell them a little bit about you, what you do and where you do it at Sonova.
Sure. So I am the VP of marketing for Sonova. We have 12 locations across Texas and Louisiana. I started in this business 16 years ago at this point, just a little bit ago, but the Botox helped. So, my home base is Suzanne Bruce's office in Houston. For those of you who know her, she's an amazing doctor, just really cool person. And what drew me to this industry particularly was a fluke meeting with Dr. Bruce and our husband, who had a very forward-thinking practice, very business-oriented. He went to grad school and he had incorporated a lot of the business practices. And right. They had a 80% cosmetic practice 16 years ago. And so heavy marketing environment with lots of opportunity. And so yep. I've been having fun ever since because I'm still here. So
16 years. We've been doing this thing for the same amount of time. And I have no Botox. And you can tell, guys, I might be able to show emotion, like, you know, but definitely look.
It's all about small movement.
My wife is like, can you tell? I'm very frustrated with you. I said, no, baby, it was the appointment yesterday. So that's fun. So at Sonova, you're in charge of all things marketing and it's general and cosmetic, correct? So you've got the
general. Yeah. So it's general, it's medical, it's cosmetic, it's surgical. We have Mohs surgeons as well. It is plastic surgery. We have research business as well. And then, we have a pharmacy side that I don't touch too well.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of service lines. So how do you prioritize? We've been talking about MOPS, marketing and ops alignment all year. How do you prioritize? Like, guys, what do you want me to do? Get them in on general and then we cross sell them? Or do we just go right to plastic? Like, how do you set your trajectory and your priorities?
That's a great question. I think that ops and marketing are one. We're like besties, right?
Okay, good.
Marketing can't do anything without a great ops team. And ops only gets better with marketing, in my opinion. Together, it's kind of like creating that strategy. And I think it depends on the clinic. So when you have multiple clinics, you have different personalities in each clinic and the doctors kind of dictate that. And so in my cosmetic forward clinics, it's obviously that's the entry point. They come in for cosmetics and then the referral business kind of gets around. And I consider it like, did my internship at Campbell Soup a really long time ago. Mm-hmm. And their counter-cyclical business was Pork and Beans. They've gotten rid of that brand since. But I consider the medical dermatology in those offices like they're Pork and Beans, right? I mean, just to put it nicely. But on my medical side, it's completely different, right? It's really the medical clinic is first. And then if we get med spa business out of that, it's a conversion at that point.
Conversion. Okay. So we won't call it cross-sell. That's interesting. And so you have some there cosmetic forward and general or medical forward. Are they acquisitions? Is Sonova, is it M&A or it's de novo? Okay. And so you acquired one and had, are they centrally located so they can send people to each other? Is there like a cosmetic focus one a mile away from the medical general, like, or doesn't play in?
In like Austin, for example, we have 5 different clinics. People really don't travel between those clinics too much. It can happen, but it doesn't really. And we have like a smattering of all offerings in those offices. So we have a little bit of cosmetic, a little bit of med spa, but mostly medical, right?
Okay, I gotcha. Okay, so you get with ops and you say, hey, listen, what are we going for here? And I can tell you're forward this or, you know, leaning towards this. Okay, we're going to drive marketing towards that.
Yeah.
I also saw that you guys have scheduling online. Is that right?
We do.
Okay, cool. Who are you doing that through? What's the tech partner? How's it going?
Next patient, absolutely adore them. Call Corey. He's amazing. You know, honestly, we've gone through a lot of tools there in that department, that area. And I think they've done just a really good job of simplifying the process for the patients and keeping it open. And then you have to go through the getting your doctors to adopt it. It's never going to be perfect. But man, they get us so close that it's amazing.
Yeah. Next patient. Very good. Okay. Talk to me about the, you have to get the doctors to adopt. A lot of doctors are hesitant to put their counters because they want flexibility, I guess. Right. Yes. Was that the main hurdle? Yes.
Also, no-shows go up with online scheduling. There's not that emotional investment when they create that appointment. And so you have to kind of work with that and kind of figure out how you can work around like mitigating that problem by calendaring it really well, like creating templates and your scheduling will adjust.
Okay. Have you guys tried calling them after the online booking is made?
Yeah.
Does that help?
It does. It does help. You know, it just depends on the office and the patient base. I find that it's very dependent on who each doctor attracts to their clinic, how the patient base behaves. And so then you kind of adapt how you treat them.
Tell me more. Are we trying to insinuate that a certain, maybe an older demographic, like what are we?
Yes.
No HIPAA violation. We're not talking about anyone specifically.
No one specific. You know, obviously age plays a factor and where you are in a city, like how hard it is to get to your office, like all kinds of things can play a factor.
Yeah.
Even the demographics of the doctor itself. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. And so the no-show rate was one hurdle and they're like, man, you know, I had this thing booked and now I'm at the office and this is nothing, you know, nobody's coming to the clinic. How do you get them over that? You say, yes, but how do you do that? You say generally like, hey, we're booking a lot more overall. Like, what do you do?
Yeah. So data wins any argument, right? So if you've got the data, you can win the argument. And that's, you know, it's not an opinion thing. It's you pilot it, you test it. And then you bring that data and you say, okay, look, so many people are using this and it's clearly a convenience factor. You know, I would say we get over 20% of our appointments come through the online scheduler at this point. And of that 20%, we're seeing a massive number of people doing it on the weekends and after hours. So,
Yeah, I love that. I love that. 20%. I was going to ask, what's the total distribution? So probably still a lot of calls, right? The forms is not a...
Yeah. So we're working on some new tools there. So I'm really excited.
I got to tell you, Maite, I don't know if this applies to Sanova, but I send an email form. I'm trying to get these like fat things around my eye. I know cholesterol, but I don't know. My wife tells me I'm ugly sometimes. So I'm trying to get it removed. And I submitted an email form to one of the biggest MSOs in the derm space. I won't name them. You don't hear back. I still haven't heard back. It's been over a week. Email forms just don't get responded to, man. I just don't have them. If you can't respond, don't have them.
They do it our often.
All right. I love that, Maite. I like it. Okay. So are you guys running digital advertising for these 12 or some of them?
You know, I think we've spoken in the past about this because I've been going on this whole journey, right?
Okay.
On like, you know, in cosmetics, social media marketing has been kind of like the big thing that happened over the last couple of years, right? But at this point, it's super saturated. And so I've been on this journey of figuring out what's next. Where do I want to put my eggs? What basket, right? And pre-pandemic, we had a ton of pay-per-click advertising going on. And it was unclear to us at that point, like how much business was that really generating versus the expense of it. And during the pandemic, we did like a massive shutdown. And so we shut down all our pay-per-click advertising. And it was a significant amount of our budget. We found it had zero effect on our business. And so my original background actually comes from pay-per-click. That's where I started even before I went to business school. And so I'm a believer in it. I just think that things change so quickly and stuff changes that, you know, you have to adapt. And so we adapted by going into social media advertising, getting really involved with local groups, a lot of local marketing. And now we're kind of looking again as what's the next step.
I love it. PPC alone, not great alone. The CAC is high. You got to blend it with organic and social media efforts. And so I always say that it's not a carte blanche solution. People say, well, just ramp up the PPC spend. Yeah. It doesn't work like
that.
And there are more cost-effective things you should do first. Local boots on ground. Tell me more about that. Is that high school sponsorships or that's PCP referral? Like where are you putting?
I'm afraid to tell you. What if they steal my ideas?
All right. Well, don't just say, is it referrals or is it sponsorship type stuff?
I mean, we do a lot of work in like local mom groups. I mean, that's the demographic. Graphic that makes the health decisions. Yeah, I know your eyes.
That's right. Hard. That's hard to scale going into like Facebook groups. And so is that
it can be a little bit hard to scale. You do need the staff to kind of manage that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I give moms a lot of credit. I'm one myself. We know how to organize, right? And so they definitely know how to organize their groups. They can be incredibly strict about their advertising policies, but it's incredibly fruitful because if you're in there and they feel like you're part of their community and you're helping service their community, it pays back tenfold. And so you really can establish a reputation in different geographic areas like that.
That's part of why I also love medical marketing, because you reach that mom. That's like not just a click. That's like a mom getting care for her family. You know, teen who feels very uncomfortable in school.
Not just her kids. It's her mom. It's her husband. She makes all the decisions. Yeah. So it's a very critical person, actually, the whole process.
Oh, it's everybody's number one target. Almost all of our clients, she's the number one target that everybody wants in advertising. I'm like, good luck, man. So y'all have a little secret nugget there. We won't tell you. Only four people listen to it anyway, some might say. So nobody's going to hear.
Okay.
I love that. I love learning something new, and that's awesome. Okay, so let's talk about PPC wasn't working. Digital advertising, not patient volume didn't change. Okay, all of the hip to the hip of stuff happened last year. Did you have to change any technology tracking, anything inherently change? And how you track ROI or your marketing tech. What did you guys have to do?
The news is I didn't have to change very much. So a lot of the things were already compliant because I have always felt like marketing for healthcare has been a bit in the stone age and we don't have our stuff connected in general. So, and then that was a conscious choice, but new technology is coming out and that technology is HIPAA compliant. So we're actually in the process of completely changing our tech stack, which is one of the funnest things that I'm working on in a while.
Yeah. So you like that? You like the tech stuff. What are you going to change? Are you bringing on CRM? Is it EHR? What are you changing?
So we've had a CRM system that was HIPAA compliant for a while with, you know, because we're an acquisition company and that was the system I had set up originally. And now they have kind of grown and blossomed over the last couple of years. I'm really excited about them. And they do some amazing stuff and they've just
Who is it?
It's Red Spot Interactive.
Red Spot, RSI, yeah. So yeah, know them well. They're on our other, we have a big plastics group.
Jason, right?
That's right. Highly recommend.
Highly recommend.
Yeah.
Great to work with, easy. They get the business. They get the questions that you're asking and how to answer them, which is really cool.
And they have the most sophisticated ROI tracking I've seen of any group. We are able to see like down to the social ad that was run, actual reimbursement, like cash pay and stuff. And if you want to talk to the marketer over there, Ed, he's brilliant, loves RSI as well. So yes, good. I need to have Jason on this one. All right, very cool. So that's fun. New tech that helps us understand where the best ROI is. Is that your favorite part of marketing, the advertising, the tech, or do you find warmth and curiosity somewhere else?
You know, I think I've always considered myself like very solution oriented. So whatever that mathematical equation to solve, whatever I'm solving for kind of is what I gravitate towards. But I have to think back to my roots and say, you know, when I started 16 years ago, no one spoke about aesthetics. Like it was like a mum's the word. I don't get Botox, but I do. You know, that kind of a situation. Very early on, we jumped on the content wagon. We used to publish in Houston. People still know about this, like a 16-page magazine that we used to mail out to people's homes. So like pre-blogs, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff. So, and so much love and work went into that. And then we kind of evolved that in digital strategy, right? From everything from the gram to TikTok to blogs and even just website doing all that. So I would say content is something I enjoy tremendously.
Yeah. Educating. It takes different forms now. It's like you said, Instagram or it could be this podcast, whatever, but it takes different forms, but it's all about, it's all about educating. And it's funny. It was so kept in the dark and now we're all so open about it. That's good.
I thank the Kardashians for that.
Yeah. I thank the I was watching Buying Beverly Hills. What's Mauricio's wife's name? What's her name? No, not Nikki Hilton. It's the It's Marie. Do you watch any of these Real Housewives? Okay. One of them has an age. She looked great. And you can tell it's all the aesthetics that have done phenomenal. My wife's like, oh my God. Like,
Alex, I just pass out.
No, dude, they go to bed at 8:30. We have 1 hour and we watch some trash TV for 1 hour and then we're asleep because you don't want to think after work and the kids. You're like, I don't want to think. I don't want to talk. Let's just watch on Netflix. Anyway, so we watch all the trash. I'm very caught up on The Bachelor. So that's awesome. You've gone through a lot of change. Are you looking at any trends this year? And a trend doesn't have to be like a new thing. It can be like, people are pulling back, like, I'm going to invest more here. Where are you going to invest more into? You're already doing online scheduling. You got one of the best CRMs I've ever seen. What trends, what should people know about? And it's April 2024 for everybody to know. Okay.
So I would say, you know, we jumped on the AI bandwagon early last year, maybe late the year prior, because it was just interesting to me. I tend to just follow my curiosity and I was like, what could this do for me? And it's really multiplied our efficiency on so many things. And it's really, really fun. And I've enjoyed it. Just even like prompting is interesting and fun to me. So since then, now I'm working on an AI chatbot, which I want to integrate on our website. So that's the project I'm working on this year that I'm really excited about. I want to reduce our bounce rate on our website specifically to get people kind of funneled through that scheduler faster. So the way I envision it is almost like a content and scheduling concierge on our website. Because what happens is our most visited page is our homepage, and it's a huge website, right? I mean, the amount of content that we have goes very, very deep, but people really don't get that far into the content. So how can I create a better experience on a website of that magnitude? And I'm hoping this is the answer. So call me in a couple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll check back. I love it. Okay. I want to talk more about that because I've gotten frustrated by AI. I'm like, it's basically an idea thought partner. It's the writing. It's like the same day overall, you know, and I don't use emojis, and but it's a good prompter. And so you found the problem was too many people are bouncing. The problem is not enough people are getting through the education. I hope that the chatbot can answer people's questions should they prompt. Is that like the thought? Like, I want someone to go in there and, hey, your location, Lafayette. Yeah, do they have Juvederm? Is that what you're trying, or like tell me more about acne?
Well, you know, last year we did an experiment with a live chat with people actually answering.
Okay.
And so I tracked kind of those conversations, and I really kind of was watching what do people want to know when they land.
What were they asking?
You know, I would say a good 40 to 50% is just routine. They are not looking at the content on the homepage and they want quick answers. And that's the fastest way to get those answers. What's your fax number? What's the address here? Do you accept this insurance? Do you do that? So if I can solve those questions faster, can we get to like the meatier content and take care of other people in other ways, right? So I'm hoping to reduce call volumes a little bit for this.
That would help. I was just about to say that'll bring that down tremendously.
And so that data will come to light very quickly, right? Hopefully, as people kind of start adopting it. I feel like people adopt these things very quickly. I was shocked, honestly, with the live chat, how quickly
really?
Kind of gravitated towards. And then on top of that, I'm hoping that the scheduler, you know, we have multiple locations. So sometimes it's hard to, and I'm actually redoing some of the interface on that on our website, but it's hard to figure out where you're going, who you're going. You know, it can be a little bit confusing. And especially if you have an older population, this could help them through that process.
I love it. So what I heard, 50% of the questions the humans were asking are basically clerical, administrative type stuff that's bogging the patient down and bogging call centers down. That's an easy thing. And the chatbots, I think, can easily answer that stuff because it's just combing your website. Yes, we are open. Yes, we take it. So that's great. And I hadn't heard that. So I'm glad I asked. And that's very interesting. And then you're hoping that they don't spend time there. They can either leave and they feel better, patient experience is better, or it gives them more time to look up your actual treatments and stuff like that, right? So, oh my God, I love that. Okay, what's your in-house team? Is it just you? Are you using a team of freelancers? You got 13 people working there. What's the deal?
I used to have a team of 5.
Okay.
That was as of last August. And then we went through kind of a massive restructuring. Now I have 2 people that work for me. And this is the part that people are going to be like, what? I have 1 person in the Philippines that works for me full time. Love them. So if you need information there, I have information there for anyone. Actually, that's been an experiment and it's working out super duper well. Like that a lot.
How'd you find them? Did you post a job in the Philippines and take apps? Did you go to Upwork? What'd you do?
No, actually, I was just looking around online and I came across a post by a company called AbroadWorks, and it's basically like a staffing agency, but based out of the Philippines, and they help draft the job description. And so then you kind of help work with them on that. And then they find you like 3 or 4 candidates, you interview them, and then you hire them.
Yep.
They work your hours. They're knowledgeable based on whatever your job description is. And you know what? The more I talk about this, the more people are saying that they have someone who works in the Philippines too, which is really interesting to me.
It's like aesthetic 16 years ago. Yeah, we've got a great team in Argentina that are phenomenal and great at media, just like everybody else. SEO, no different. And it allows us to work more hours and do more work. So we're all about it. We're all about it. Doesn't matter where a human is, as long as they can do work.
Yeah, they're great. And their English is perfect. And it's just been a great transition. And I did it on like a bit of an experimental whim. Yeah. And it turned out to be fantastic.
Yeah, awesome. And you can't get away from the former Spanish colonies, can you? And what kind of work? What is the other person? What are the both of their roles?
I have one person embedded in our Houston office that is kind of like the most complex office in all of our family of offices, to be honest, because it's so heavily cosmetic. We do a ton of event marketing there, and that works really well for us there. So I have someone embedded in that office.
Too. Got it. Embedded. And then you're running the whole thing. What would you tell... When you came out of school 6 months ago, you said 16 years, you did it yourself. But when you came out, what would you tell Maite 16 years ago about getting into this marketing field to help her accelerate faster?
I would probably tell her to take more technical classes.
Yeah.
To fully understand the technology on the back end. I'm not the most technical person. So I have to learn everything from scratch on my own. And technology is changing so fast that, you know, when I started, we were still doing TV, radio, billboards. Mail, right?
Yeah.
And now if you don't understand the technology and how it all interplays, you're kind of like...
Not a good marketer anymore. Yeah. And there was no way we would have known that we were going to have to be technologists, lawyers, ops specialists, and creative marketers. Like that was, it was a lot easier. When I started Cardinal, this was kind of a simpler thing. And everyone thought we were so smart for knowing digital. I was like, it's just smart. Yeah. So I think that's great advice. Understand the technology.
One more thing, Alec.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing. I would highly encourage them to get their first jobs in e-commerce. So I started
an
online store.
Yeah.
E-commerce is just leagues ahead of everybody else and what they're doing, how they're using data and marketing in general. So
I agree. Some of our best people have come from e-com because it's so transactional. You have to be so sharp and move so fast compared to lead gen. So if you can do e-com, you can do the rest. If you can do the rest, you can't necessarily do e-com. That's how much more competitive it is. So, I learned a ton. I learned about AI from you in a practical application. I'm so sick of the things that you're reading. AI is this and that. I'm like, I haven't seen a ton of actual use cases. Our team's experimenting. We're going to do a live stream on. So that's great. I learned about that. I learned about when I come out of school, what I should be doing and about how online scheduling helps good vendors and CRM and scheduling. Maite, this has been awesome for me. I don't know about it for you, but thanks for joining.
Ignite. Very fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Ignite. Interested in keeping up with the latest trends in healthcare marketing? Subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review. For more healthcare marketing tips, visit our blog at cardinaldigitalmarketing.com.